Expedia and Visit Scotland invite you to come experience the beauty that awaits in Scotland. The sweep of wild coastlines, quiet lochs and untamed landscapes. Fresh cuisine that feels rooted in the land. Come experience the kind of stillness that stays with you long after you leave. Plan your Scottish escape today at expedia.com/visitscotland.
Ready to soundtrack your summer? With Red Bull Summer All Day Play, you choose a playlist that fits your summer vibe the best. Are you a festival fanatic, a deep end DJ, a road dog, or a trail mixer? Just add a song to your chosen playlist and put your summer on track. Red Bull Summer All Day Play. Red Bull gives you wings. Visit redbull.com/brightsummerahead to learn more. See you this summer.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Andover, Massachusetts-based jazz composer and songwriter Ron Ryder. We caught up with him about his new 2026 album, Compositions in Blues and Other Hues, a life in science, career in music, and spots in between. This new release is a collection of 11 new straight-ahead jazz tunes. It is a labor of love for all involved, and it's evident in the inspired playing by five musicians charged with bringing these compositions to life. Better known as a pianist, he made his debut as a composer with a set of 10 works on the recording Latin Jazz Sessions that runs just 10 minutes short of an hour. We cover a life of loving both science and jazz and composing music that moves the masses. Enjoy this interview. Well, hey, Ron, it's great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out today. Looking forward to getting into the new album and your life and music.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's begin with what I always ask up front. I thought I could get away from this question, which is COVID. 6 years ago, it was changing the world, changing the way we live. How did you get through that COVID era, and how has it changed the way that you approach things today?
Well, I would say COVID was really, the change was really what convinced me to become a musician full time. Prior to that, I had been a research scientist. And I was getting tired of doing so. And I've always been, had one foot in the musical world. And that's really been my passion. And a friend during COVID and at the beginning, you know, no one knew which, what was up and what was down at that point, had introduced me to some new technology, some recording, home recording type technology. And I started really, writing full-time at that point. And I learned shortly after that, I remembered a newspaper article I saw in our local paper by a fellow named John Finbury. And John is also a composer who was nominated for a Latin Grammy for his work. And so I contacted John and he was most gracious, and he made some introductions for me, and I got together with Bob Patton, who helped produce my first CD back in 2023, ultimately. And from there, I've just been truly dedicated to everything. So it really helped me to focus and realize what I wanted to do, and gave me the time to make it happen.
So talk to me a little bit about Compositions in Blues and Other Hues. It's such a wonderful album. What was your vision going into this album?
Oh, you know, there are some projects, I'm sure you and listeners have had this experience, that sometimes you start a project that just seems to be jinxed from the beginning. Everything, the best laid plans, just everything seems to be, there seem to be obstacles every step of the way. That was not the case with this project. This was one of these wonderful cases where projects where everything fell into place. I had been writing these, I had thought about making a straight ahead recording for many, many years. And when I sat down and realized I had enough material to do so, I got in touch with some of the musicians who I worked with before on other projects. And it just seemed, in really in short order, everybody's schedule just fit together perfectly. The studio time was available, and it was the last 2 days, literally, of 2024, that we're in the studio, and there was really no distractions at that point. And all the musicians who played together many times before just got along famously, and there was just a tremendous amount of cooperation, and everything just, it seemed almost too good to be true. It worked out so well. The idea was to make the, my goal was to make a recording that was as close to being in a live jazz club as possible while in the studio. And I think with some of the sound engineers' efforts of the separation of the instruments, I think we got pretty close to accomplishing that. So I'm really pleased with how the effort turned out.
Zootopia 2 has come home to Disney Plus.
Let's go!
Get ready for a new case.
We're gonna crack this case and prove we're the greatest partners of all time!
New friends.
You are...
Gary the Snake.
And your last name?
The Snake.
Dream team.
New habitats.
Zootopia has a secret reptile population.
You can watch the record-breaking phenomenon at home.
You're clearly working it.
Zootopia 2, now available on Disney Plus, rated PG.
So at the end of the day, what are you hoping the listener gets from this recording?
A sense that music, the post-bop, is alive and well, and that there is a real sense of spontaneity between the players, and that they... again, as I think I wrote in the liner notes, that they can close their eyes and they're transported to their favorite jazz club, listening to some of their favorite music. Nothing would make me happier than that.
So talk to me a little bit about this split between kind of the right brain and the left brain, between science and music. How did both of those fascinations become a part of your ultimate career path up to this point?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. The connection between science and jazz. I've come across every once in a while articles from other people who are either musicians and going into science or scientists who are also play music, and somehow the sense that the brain is wired in such a way that there's some sort of predisposition, or there's some sort of unique correlation between complex problem solving and composing and improvisation. Personally, I don't know enough about brain science to really have any opinion on that. So I prefer to take a more generic explanation. And I would say that science, what I took away from science or bring to it is I learned discipline and critical thinking. And those skills have helped me to distill a given musical idea to its really its simplest form. Simple is really hard. I mean, paradoxically, one might think that simple would be easy because there are fewer elements to concern oneself. But really understanding the essence of the idea or motion or emotion that its true meaning that one is trying to express in, say, a few musical notes is very, very difficult. And this is why I refer to composing as excruciating joy. It's not only music. I think any of the creative arts, whether it be painting physics or chemistry or creative writing, I think we all suffer from the same challenges. And so really succinctly expressing a complete thought, at least for me, I find very, very challenging. Rather, I think that I like to think of it a little, the whole thing is a little different, that really that the hierarchy is not necessarily science or music per se, but really they are just sort of subsets to creativity being the driving force. That is the one's ability to generate novel ideas. And so this is how I prefer to treat the two. And I believe that sort of the creativity is really what is central, and one's vocation, whether it be initially music or science or any of the other creative arts, is what's reflects one's passion. I would say, just as an example, someone say Bill Evans, while we think of him as the superlative pianist and composer, I would say he probably would have made a great biologist architect, if that was his predilection. Or Miles Davis could have been a successful serial entrepreneur in Silicon Valley. And I would say any of them would have brought novel ideas and their creativity and made great contributions, but it wouldn't necessarily have brought them happiness because that indeed was not their passion. So that's how my take on it.
So talk to me a little bit about your beginnings in music. Who were influences, and what was like one of the first live shows you saw that you loved or made you think you wanted to do that one day?
Oh, so I've always, from a very young age, was involved in music. I thought that I was going to be a famous jazz guitarist growing up, and I was going to, I had dreams of going to Berklee School of Music. I grew up in the Boston area, and so Berklee was everywhere one looked. It was all around. But when it came time to graduate and go to college, my parents had a different idea of what they'd like to see me pursue first. And so I went, decided to pursue science, thinking that, well, I'll get my degree, I'll get a job, and I'll save all my money, and then I'll go to music school. And then I discovered as time went on that, one can be creative in science as well. So I wound up pursuing my formal career, at least my day job, as a research scientist, but I was always continuing to compose. And then later on, a number of years ago, I decided that it was time to do something different. And I became working on music and composing and recording full time. My influences growing up in the Boston area, we had a radio station, WBCN, which was an underground FM station back in the late 60s and 70s. I'm a child of this, of the 60s and 70s. And they had an arrangement that we had with the Jazz Workshop, which was a great jazz club, which brought in all the big names in the Boston area. And they were truly revered. And they would broadcast the last set of whoever was playing that week at the Jazz Workshop and other concerts. And so As a young teenager, I was exposed to lots and lots of different musicians from Bill Evans, Mose Allison, and many others, Chick Corea in particular, I recall. But my very first concert that I'd ever attended was at the Jazz Workshop. I think I probably had a junior driver's license at the time, so I had a strict curfew I had to be home by. And I remember wondering whether they were even going to let us in because we were so young. But they did, and we saw Gatto Barbieri. And it was the first time in a club up front where the musicians were almost so close one could touch them. And it was just, remember, finding it exhilarating. It was so exciting to hear this music, and the band was burning, and they were just, that was just truly excited. Went back many, many times to see many other concerts. In terms of influences, certainly that was probably Gatto Barbieri was certainly struck my interest in Latin music. Chick Corea I don't think anybody, when Light as a Feather came out, Return to Forever, and we were all exposed to sambas, and at that point there was so much going on with the electrification and of jazz, between Miles Davis putting out Bitches Brew and Return to Forever being electrified, that clearly had quite an impact. There was a show on another local radio station in Boston every Sunday night called Spaces that my friends and I would get together religiously at 10 o'clock every Sunday night to listen, and we would be exposed. Steve Ellman was the DJ, I recall, to the latest jazz albums at the time. And that was a real education. Then later on, I think there was, might have been the early 90s or so, before, where a lot of the musicians from Cuba were starting to come over to the United States to tour as sort of a cultural exchange initially. And there's a group, Cubanissimo, who I saw live. It was the first time I really was exposed to the Afro-Cuban influences that were just, exhilarating. And of course, McCoy Tyner played a huge role. As well in my musical education, but it's really being around in the Boston area and having access to clubs and seeing all these great musicians that were brought in.
So the one thing that's been emblematic of your sound and your approach is this Latin jazz flavor. And you could have picked any sort of kind of way of expressing your voice. What has it been about that Latin flair that's been kind of your focal point, your passion?
Yeah. Probably no one's more surprised than me. I guess the only way I could describe it is that it makes me feel so good to listen to it. It really just stirs so easily, just stirs my soul. And I will sit down. I do most of my composing at the piano, thinking, gee, okay, I'm gonna would love to expand my repertoire of post-bop tunes and all. And next thing I know, it comes out Latin. So I think it's just, I must be predisposed in some way to do so. And it just seems, we've just finished a new recording Actually, just last week, we finished up the session, and that's for the most part Latin again. So I think it's just in my bones.
Absolutely. So what is it about the world of science and then the world of music that have come together to complement each other? How do each of those enhance each other in your pursuits of loving both of them and doing the best in both of those fields?
I think it's just the opportunity to express my creativity. Certainly, in just as in music, which is really my natural passion, there's some, you know, we all like some types of music versus others. Same in science, there's some areas of science that really I find exciting in others than that. But it's really just the ability to be able to make a contribution and come up with new ideas and you know, become get excited by doing so. Same, no different with then composing a piece of music, something that one generates that, you know, you find that really resonates and one gets very excited about.
So what do you like the best about being a professional musician? What gets you up every day?
Gosh, so I have to say, to be honest, probably every musician or composer, you always wonder whether you've written all the compositions you're going to be able to write. Have you run out of ideas? That's the biggest fear I often have. And then somehow an idea comes around and dispels that. The idea of coming up with something new and then working it through and distilling it down to being a complete thought, and then seeing the idea develop into a full piece, and then ultimately seeing it executed by you know, world-class musicians, and then sitting back enjoying the fruits of all those efforts. There's nothing can be more satisfying to me.
So why do you love this music that we call jazz?
So to me, jazz is classical music with a groove. It's evolved into many different things. What I think the dominant element in jazz is, in composition for that matter, is improvisation. But what's different in jazz than, say, I mean, lots of art forms, you know, rock music, for example, has improvisation. There's never a rock song without a guitar solo. But in jazz, the improvisation sort of has this unrestricted freedom about it. And it's just a marvel to me that when a soloist, the ability to do this, you know, they take this composition, this idea before them, and they, you know, this happens instantaneously. They deconstruct it into its different parts, and then they reassemble some sort of abstraction of this idea that still, if in a successful solo, that captures its essence. And so in that respect, it's a different listening experience each time it is performed. And consequently, it makes jazz a living art form in that respect. And so it's the idea of taking something and then examining every inch of it and re-expressing it as this more abstract a form, which I find very appealing. And in science, there's also that kind of can be that kind of abstraction as well. But in the end, in both music and science, human beings get together and they do an experiment that has a finite beginning and an end and concrete results. And same with music, where one has these notes that are on a piece of paper that are then translated into musical sounds and puts together in a way that our ears, our brain via our ears experience, and there's this lovely resonance that happens.
So let me ask you this, Ron, if you could go back in time, get into a time machine and go back in time and see one jazz show anywhere, where would you go? What would you love to see?
I would have loved to, I would go to Carnegie Hall and I would see Thelonious Monk with John Coltrane.
Yeah, that would be amazing. So
yes.
let me ask you this, at the end of the day, everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I think I'm a person with a lot of eclectic interests. And I just love being creative. I think people would consider me creative, probably more on the arty side of things. I've done, I try to express that creativity in all the different things I take on, whether it be music or science or gardening or you name it. It's, I think that's how I think of myself.
So Ron, all of your albums are streaming out there on all of the big major platforms, but Bandcamp, you got Compositions in Blue and Other Hues, Latin Jazz Sessions, Dia Precioso. Looks like everything's up there. Is that the best place to download and get a copy?
Yes. Okay. Bandcamp is in iTunes, I guess, in Amazon are the two places where CDs are currently available.
Okay, excellent.
And there are plenty of CDs still available.
Okay, excellent. Well, Ron, it was so great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for taking a minute out to talk about the music and to talk about your world of science and music. It's been an honor.
Oh, my pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Right. Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Massachusetts, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Ron for coming on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.
You can't reason with the sun. Trust us, we've tried. This summer, it's time to put that angry ball of fire on mute. Columbia's OmniShade technology is engineered to protect you from the sun's harsh rays that can burn and damage your skin. The sun is relentless, but so is our gear. Level up your summer at Columbia.com to spend more time outside and less time slathering on aloe lotion. You're welcome. Columbia, engineered for whatever.